We began, like I said, an Advent series last week, and Pastor Sam preached on the first word of the first Sunday of Advent. Each Sunday has a word that is the sort of the focus of the day. And so last week we looked at the word hope, and Pastor Sam preached a word from Genesis 3. I'm going to allude to that a little bit in just a moment. Today the word is peace, which Will shared with us right before lighting our candle this morning. The word is peace, and we're focusing on the fact that God keeps his promises. Isn't that what Christmas is? I mean, Christmas is about a lot of things, I guess, but it truly is about God keeping his promise, isn't it? That's what Advent is God delivering on what he said he was going to do, and God never breaks his promises. He always keeps them. He's faithful. That's the word for it, right? He's faithful. And so today, as we talk about God keeping his promises, we're going to look at the fact that God has kept his promise of bringing peace to this world and to his people. So there's three passages you see on the screen behind me. You can go ahead and turn to Micah 5. Will be the first one that we're in. We'll read that one. And then you can go to the next one, but we're not going to read them in succession quickly. There'll be a good gap between the two, but if you want to like take a worship guide and put it there or a pen or something in the other texts, you got plenty of time to get there. But let's begin with our big idea. Go ahead and put the big idea up there if you don't mind. Big idea this morning is that peace is not just the absence of conflict. True peace means taking what is broken and restoring it to wholeness. I get that from the Bible Project. They have a video on peace, and I think that's a really good working definition. And what I want to be our big idea this morning, that peace is not just the absence of conflict. If I were to ask you the definition, you probably would say, well, it means not having conflict. But it's a little bit more than that. Biblical peace is not just the absence of conflict. True peace, biblical peace, means taking what is broken and restoring it to wholeness. Last week, we got to spend Thanksgiving with my side of the family, and so me and Brooke and our four little kids went up to Pigeon Forge, and we got to spend some time in a house up there, a cabin in the mountains, and I think there was like 12 or 13 grandkids in this house, so you can imagine, very peaceful and quiet. Absolutely not. It was an absolute madhouse, but they had fun and made memories, and you know, we came home and took a long nap. Because that's what we needed, right? But we had a lot of fun. One of my favorite things to do when I get to visit with my parents, and I have three siblings. I have two brothers and a sister, and my older brother and my younger brother were able to be there for a stretch. My sister is overseas, and so she's not able to be. But I was talking with my older brother and my mother. My mom was talking to us. We always reminisce on stories. Maybe you do that too. And we like each other pretty good, so our stories usually end with laughter and not with screaming matches or anything like that. So one of the stories, though, we always laugh at my mom because she was at home with the kids like all the time, and dad pastored, so he would be at the office. But mom raised us really hands-on because she didn't have to work, and we're grateful for that. Anyway, my mom loves decorating her house, and so it's Christmas time. You got nativity scenes, you know, in every room, and Christmas trees in every room, even the bathroom. It's not a joke. I'm being serious, okay? But she loved decorating the house, and my brothers and I were brothers. I mean, we did what kids do, and I was probably like, I don't know, 13 or so, probably too big to be doing what we were doing, but we were like wrestling in the floor in the living room, acting crazy, probably a football involved, who knows, you know, that's where you play ball, right, in the house. And my mom did what maybe you would do and say, guys, stop. And then you go from stop to stop. And then you go, you know what I'm saying, right? It just keeps getting louder and noisier and louder. And so we were just ignoring her, which wasn't the right move because my mom got really ticked off. And she's like, if you don't stop it, you know, I'm going to murder you. No, she didn't say that. But she did say, like, knock it off, guys. And then next thing you know, man, we didn't listen. And somebody threw a ball or something, or maybe bumped with their shoulder, bumped the nativity scene. And Joseph, poor Joseph, he fell to the ground and his head fell off. Didn't just fall off, it actually broke off. It was like porcelain or something. And his head broke off. And my mom, I'd never seen or heard her do this before. We've been spanked, you know, we've been a lot of different methods. You know, I've seen her angry and running at me with a belt. Anyway, we're not going to get into all that. But this time, she did something I've never heard her do. She just let out this primal yell. Ah! Like that. And I was like, we broke her. We just broke mom. We didn't break Joseph. We broke mom. And she storms out of the living room, goes back to her room, and shuts the door. That was a new one. Like we'd never seen. Usually it's coming at us, not away from us. And so she went to her room, shut the door. And she was so, maddest I've ever seen her, so mad. And she was just like, if I go to them, I'm going to hurt them. So she's like, I'm just going to go to my room, and I'm going to shut the door. Good job, Mom. She's going to listen to the message. I know she is. So hopefully I represent you well, Mother. She goes in her room, shuts the door, and me and my brothers look at each other, absolutely freaked out. We didn't know what to do. What do we do here? So my older brother, always the problem solver, goes and picks up Joseph, headless Joseph, you know, because, you know, he had broken his head off. He did it. We didn't, you know. So my older brother, Kyle, he picks up Joseph, and we walk back to my mom's bedroom like Oliver Twist asking for more soup, you know. And we knock on the door, and she answers the door, "What?" And my older brother goes, "Mom, it was a clean break. I think we can fix it." We can glue it together, right? And she was like, "You guys just don't understand. That one was expensive. You don't just fix that one. Even if you glue it, it's always going to be broken." And she was right. Even if you glue it together, is it fixed? Well, not really, right? You can't restore it to what it was before. And what she said was, "Boys, it will always be broken." And she was right. You can glue it, you can cover up the break, but the break would always be there. Last week, Pastor Sam preached from Genesis 3, and he talked about brokenness. He talked about enmity. The word enmity is a word that's synonymous for like conflict, and the result of that conflict between us and God as a result of our sin is brokenness. What I mean is that sin in the Garden of Eden didn't just break God's heart. Sin broke man's relationship with God, okay? Both. It did break God's heart, but even of greater consequence, it broke man's relationship with God. There was separation, enmity, conflict. Entrance even to the tree of life that represented eternal dwelling with God was sealed off, and it was guarded by these amazing creatures. There was no peace anymore between God and people, only conflict. And here's what I want you to understand, and I think Sam said this well last week, that the Bible is a story. One story, okay? Lots of stories here, right? What's your favorite Bible story? What we mean by that is that there's lots of stories, but this is one story, and the Bible is a story of God bringing peace back to his creation and bringing peace back with his creation. Because when sin happened, peace was gone, but peace was also promised, yeah? Peace was promised. And so, if you're taking notes, I'm just going to walk you through a really quick structured outline of what it means that God brought peace to us. And the first step there is what I just said is, number one, that peace was promised by our God. Peace was promised. It's a theme of Christmas, right? That God is a promise keeper. And when we talk about Advent, which again means arrival, we're saying that God delivered on the promise that he said, "I'm going to bring peace to my people." Now, when we see the word peace, maybe a lot of things come to mind. But the word that will come to mind for the Jewish audience, which this is the primary context, we have to look back and get ourselves in their mindset. Peace was a big word, a big term. I don't mean lengthwise. I mean, it was lofty. The word for peace there, actually, you know the word for peace in the Hebrew language. Maybe it's shalom. Have you ever heard that word, shalom? Well, the idea of shalom, peace, is much more than we may think. We may think peace is, that means no conflict. Peace is the opposite of war. It's just no conflict. Or may think peace like, think of the 70s, like hippies or something like that. But that's not what should come to mind when we think of biblical peace. It's not just the absence of conflict, it's the opposite of conflict. What do I mean by that? It's the difference between this, what's the opposite of this? It's not just this, it's this. Whereas conflict is being at odds and having friction, it's not just that the friction's not there, it's that the opposite occurs, is that we go from friction to togetherness, wholeness, fullness, completeness, mutual benefit. Shalom was a core value of God's Old Testament people. And by the way, it still should be a core value of God's New Testament people, me and you. That shalom, not just absence of conflict, but the presence of fullness, completeness. You see, we live in a world both full of outer conflict and inner conflict, and we long for not just the absence of conflict, we long for fullness. We long for peace, completeness. We long for shalom. And God promised long, long, long ago that he would bring shalom, not just the absence of conflict, but wholeness, completeness, fullness to his people. one of those promises, and there are dozens in the Old Testament, but I want to talk about one in Micah, the book of Micah, this morning in Micah 5. Micah was a prophet to God's people, and they were God's disobedient. He was God's disobedient people, the audience of the book of Micah. Jerusalem, when Micah is writing these things, he says that Jerusalem will be surrounded. A siege is the word that he used, which is a military term to surround an encampment or a city and starve them of resources and food. And so literally, you're just kind of breaking them on by trapping them. And this is a siege. And so Micah is writing at a time when Jerusalem was being laid siege by the Assyrians. And in the back of the Jewish mind, you have from God the promise of shalom. But then you look on every side and you think shalom is far from us. What gives? Well, it's in this context that Micah writes, Micah 5, 1 through 5. I'm going to read it. And I want you to focus on what God says is coming to them despite what their circumstances look like around them. He says, "Now muster your troops, O daughter of troops. Siege is laid against us. With a rod they strike the judge of Israel on the cheek." Now listen to this. He says, but, things aren't looking good. He says, but you, O Bethlehem Ephrathah, it's a clan, it's a small city, Bethlehem, who are too little to be among the clans of Judah, from you, Bethlehem, shall come forth for me one who is to be ruler in Israel, whose coming forth is from of old, from ancient days. Therefore, he, that is God, shall give them, that is Israel, up until the time when she who is in labor has given birth. Then the rest of his brothers shall return to the people of Israel, and he shall stand, this is the one from Bethlehem, shall stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they shall dwell secure. For now, he shall be great to the ends of the earth." And look at what the beginning of verse 5 says. "And he shall be their peace." He shall be their peace. There's a lot of little nuggets there, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on any of these passages, but I just want to give you quick bullet points to focus on. The first thing is obviously the mention of Bethlehem. That should maybe come to mind as a Christmas thing, because we know that Jesus was born in Bethlehem. By the way, if you know Luke chapter 2, Caesar Augustus had put forth a census and brought Joseph and Mary and many others back to the hometown, the place of their heritage. And so Joseph and Mary going back to Bethlehem happened because of the decree of a secular ruler just in time for this birth of Jesus to fulfill a promise of God from a few hundred years prior. You understand? That's amazing. God is amazing. He's so wonderfully sovereign. It also says that his birth was from of old. That's what it says in verse 2. "Whose coming forth is from of old, from ancient days." What does that mean? It's kind of doubling down by saying this coming king, this one that's going to come, this ruler from Bethlehem, this is a long time in the making. In fact, we know it was so long in the making that we looked at it in Genesis 3. That's a long time in the making. God has this plan that's unfolding. It says that God shall give them up, being Israel. In Daniel, we just finished the book of Daniel, right? We saw that this giving up was God's plan that Israel's enemies would prevail for a time, that conflict would surround them, peace would be far from them, but one would advent, one would arrive. It says that he would come and shepherd the flock of God with God's strength, that his rule would be great to the ends of the earth, that he would be their peace. Now, obviously, we've danced around it long enough. Who's it talking about? Who's it talking about? Jesus. It's talking about Jesus. It sounds a lot like what Jesus would do. And we know that this book, though written hundreds of years before the advent of Christ in that Bethlehem manger, the promise comes to fulfillment in Jesus. Another promise is in Isaiah 9:6. This is the passage that Will read to begin our service. Isaiah 9:6 says, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of" what? Peace. The word there, shalom. Prince of shalom, the Prince of Peace. He is the everlasting Prince of Shalom, who doesn't just bring the absence of conflict, but who would restore that which is broken to fullness. You see, through Isaiah and through Micah, God has made a promise, and he is a promise keeper. And so what I want you to see next is that promise, or peace was promised to us a long time ago, but that God delivered on that promise, and he's delivered on it because peace is something we have already. That's number two. We have peace already. Peace already. And we're going to end with something in just a moment that, again, we talk about Advent, that this has already happened. This is something we can look back at. Jesus has arrived, and yet we look forward. And so let's talk first about the fact that peace has already arrived in Jesus' Advent, because Mary did give birth, as was promised, and Jesus' Advent was for a peace-bringing purpose. Wednesday, we're going through the book of John in refresh out here, and we're still in chapter 1. One of the things that I mentioned this past Wednesday was that John the Baptist came and wanted people to understand that they had a problem being dead and distant from God, dead in sin, dead-hearted, and yet distant from God. And that's the problem that we all have. But this is not the way it was in the beginning. No, there was no dividing wall of hostility between God and man. There was a fullness of a relationship between Adam, Eve, and God, right? We looked last week about that break coming. But I want you to understand that God has had a plan for a long time to be with people. In the beginning, he was with Adam and Eve. Do you have that slide that I sent you guys to have the list of God's design? Yeah, here we go. I want you to check this out with me. This is it's probably one of my favorite themes in all of the Bible. And I'm going to kind of go through it sort of quickly, but I want you to see something amazing. Again, being dead and distant from God wasn't the way that it originally was supposed to be. God's design was that Adam and Eve and people, his people that he created, would be with God, a people that were among God, with God, had a relationship with him. But what happened? We have a tragedy, the tragedy that we looked at last week in Genesis chapter 3, that sin entered the world and our sin corrupted the design of God, and so people were separated from God. But then God unfolded his intent, and you read the rest. Again, this is one story. God unfolds his intent and says, I intend to be with my people. And so he sort of gives them this amazing thing called the tabernacle or the temple. And it was his way of saying, I'm going to bring myself among you. Even though we have this wall between us, my design is that I'm with you. And so he gives him this intent and says, I want you to build a tabernacle, which is just a massive tent. And later on, he would say, I want you to build a temple, which is a dwelling place for me. Could you put the image up there with that room? Okay, so this is not perfect, but this is sort of just an artist rendering of the inside of the temple, Solomon's temple. Now, what I want you to see is what you see back there in the background. That's a 30-feet-high curtain that's very, very thick. It separates, and you see these guys in sort of fancy clothes in this little courtyard. This is a holy place that was accessible by priests and people serving the temple. But behind that curtain was a place called the Holy of Holies. That was not a place that a bunch of people could access. It was only accessible by one man. He was the high priest of Israel. And he served the temple. And he would go in there on one day of the year. And by the way, he couldn't just waltz in there. He had to do all these purification rituals. And he had to come the right way. And what this curtain symbolizes is God is separate from people. You can't just waltz into God's presence. In fact, you see some times where God shows himself to people and blinds them or knocks them to their feet and so forth and so on. You know why? Because sin and God are not like this. God is holy, and we are not holy. And so he gives them this picture, this shadow, this right here, this temple, and say, listen, I want you to build this temple because I intend to be among my people. I want to be with you, and yet I can't really be with you because you are sinners and I am holy. And so they put up this curtain that divides the dwelling place of God and this holy of holies and the dwelling place of men. And so while they're among one another, there is this huge barrier between the two of them. But then you have the intervention. Can you go back to that slide, please? The intervention. God intervenes. And so the temple's destroyed. We looked at this not long ago. The temple is destroyed. And then what gives? Is God not with his people anymore? And then what happens? Pastor Chris read this just a moment ago, right? The angel appears and says, you're going to have a son, and you're going to call his name Jesus, and he'll be named, do you remember? Emmanuel, which means God with us. That's his original design. It's the problem that was fractured, the tragedy. It's his intent with the temple, and Jesus comes as God's intervention to say, God wants to be with people. But then he gives us this amazing illustration. By the way, Don't you see that Emmanuel is such a beautiful thing? Because when we couldn't come to God, God came to us. When we couldn't come to God, God came to us. But then we see Jesus lives this perfect life. He dies this sinner's death. And the death that he died was on the cross, a horrifying, humiliating, cursed death. And there's this shadow, this illustration of what is to come. Bible says that when Jesus was crucified, that the veil, you remember that picture we looked at just a moment ago? The huge curtain that separates the presence of God from the presence of people. That huge curtain, it says, was torn in two from top to bottom. This is kind of what I want you to have this image. And I think I've done this before. But if this is the curtain that separates people from God, here's what happens, is that this temple veil is, you know, dozens of feet high. It would be one thing if a priest walked in there and said, we're gonna separate the barrier. But it says that the temple veil was torn from the top, from top to bottom. Now, why does that matter? Because God gave an illustration when Jesus died that not man, but he was the one that was tearing in half the separating barrier between God and people. What a beautiful picture of God's design, of the tragedy, of his intent, the solution, the intervention, and of the illustration of what is to come. And we have a double entendre in Ephesians 2. Look at Ephesians 2, verses 13 and 14. Again, I want you to have in mind the tragedy, the separation, but then the solution, that Jesus came and tore that temple veil in two from top to bottom. This picture of God being back in good relationship with people. Ephesians 2, 13 and 14 says this. Amazing two words, man. But now. Whew. But now. But now, in Christ Jesus, you who were once far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. For he himself is our peace. That sounds a lot like Micah 5:5, by the way. He will be their peace. He himself is our peace, who has made us both one, Jew, Gentiles. We're together, we have peace, and has broken down in his flesh the dividing wall of hostility, of conflict. He's broken down the wall of conflict. Notice, by the way, in those two verses, the verb tense. It's already, it's today, it's not later. It says, but now, not later, but now in Christ Jesus, you who were far off, were, but now it's different. You have been brought near, not something that's going to happen later. It's happened now by the blood of Christ. It says that he himself is our peace, not that he himself is going to be our peace. It says that he has made us both one and has broken down the dividing wall, not saying he will break it down. Do you understand that peace is something that we have now, not something that we have to wait until we go to heaven for? We can have that now. Guys, we long for peace on earth. But the truth of the gospel is that you can have peace now, but only through one way. And Jesus said this in John 14:6. No one comes to the Father, that's peace, no one comes to the Father except through me. There's only one way to gain access to the holy, only one way to have that veil torn and be back in a peaceful relationship with God. And it is only through Jesus. And by the way, the double entendre is so neat in that passage. Because he's saying, not only do you have peace with God, but you can have peace with people. You can have people on peace on earth. Isn't that what the angel told the shepherds, by the way? Peace on earth. He's arrived. And understand how crazy it is to talk about a subject like this when there is so little peace in our world. Well, you've heard all the things that I've been saying, but anybody who is paying attention at all, not just to international foreign affairs, not just to global conflict, not just, I'm talking about in your life. How much peace do you have in your home? How much peace do you have in your workplace? How much peace do you have in your neighborhood? How much peace do we have in Meridian? Just a lot of peace, right? Do you understand the conflict? It's already. We already have peace, but we look around and say, well, I don't know about that. You may come in here today and have a terribly heavy heart and say, Caleb, you keep using that word, peace, but I'm suffering. I'm struggling. It's all I can do to put my feet on the floor and roll out of bed in the morning. Peace. Not in my head, not in my heart. Some of you, your marriages are not at peace. You think, peace? We're just trying not to do anything we're going to regret. Peace? We don't have peace. Some of you have received a diagnosis and you say, peace? No, no, no. Peace is far from me. Or maybe this holiday season, peace is not the word you'd use to describe how you're feeling between Thanksgiving and Christmas. There are people in this room that have lost siblings, parents, children, spouses. I'm not talking about in history. I'm talking about since last Christmas. And so now we're here again, as we do every year. And you come to church and here we go. They're going to talk about all these fuzzy feelings like hope and joy and peace and love. Not my experience. And I want to speak to you about that. And that's what I meant when I said this morning earlier, that we live in the contrast of how you feel and what God says is true. How you feel is not what is true. Who is the final arbiter of truth? Not your feelings, God Almighty. And so I'm telling you, number one, all that pain that I just described, if you're feeling that, it is real. But I'm telling you that there is a God who has brought to be a world and existence and a reality that is far more real than the feelings that you're feeling right now. Have you ever spoken to someone who is going through something similar to what I just mentioned a moment ago, and they say, you know what, I just have a peace about it. I just have a peace. I mentioned just a few days ago that my buddy Evan had brain surgery. He's doing real well, by the way. Still got a blind spot. He can't see things to the left of whatever he's looking at. But I was like, were you freaked out over that? He said, you know me. Normally I would be, but for some reason I'm at peace. Well, I wonder where that comes from. He will be your peace. He is our peace. Or as Philippians 4:7 says, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts, will guard your minds in Christ Jesus. You know, the verse right before that says, through prayer and supplication. You pray, you pray, you pray, you pray, you pray. And then when it hits the fan, peace. Not because of the circumstances, but because of the God who reigns over the circumstances. This is why Paul said in Romans 8, if God is for us, who can be against us? No one. We have peace now. We have peace already. John 14:27, Jesus said, this is right before he's crucified and leaves the earth after his resurrection. This is right before all that starts to happen. He says to his disciples, listen to what he says. He says, peace, peace I leave with you. Peace. These guys would be martyred for their faith. He says, I'm leaving with you peace. Peace I leave with you. He says, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give it to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. Now, why would he say that? Because he knew that there would be times in this life where our hearts would be troubled, where our hearts would be tempted to be afraid. And Jesus said this because on the surface, there are many reasons to fear, many reasons to panic, many reasons to be anxious. Many are the distresses of this life. And Jesus knew that that would feel that way. He had distresses in this life. But again, you and I can't trust our feelings. We have to trust the truth. And the truth is that we can have peace right now. But the other part of that, other side of that coin is we long for the day the truth is finalized. And that's the third thing. We have peace already, but we also have peace not yet. Not yet. Peace not yet. We lit these Advent candles, again, typifying this light that is to come. We're lighting these candles to say that light has come in Jesus. But you know, we're also lighting these candles to say one day light will come again, finally, fully, completely. We live in a dark world, and there's darkness, spiritual darkness out there in the world, and you don't have to look long to find that. But there's also darkness right here, isn't there? There are dark things that you experience in your heart. The answer to both is in Revelation 21, verses 1 through 5. Revelation 21, 1 through 5. I unpack this theme of Emmanuel. God with us. God was with people in the beginning. Then there was the tragedy of brokenness and separation from God. Then God made a promise. He even gave this shadow, this temple with this veil. He said, I'm with you, but I have a barrier between you. But then Jesus comes and the angel says, he's Emmanuel. He's God with us. But then God leaves us. But then he sends the Spirit and it's God with us. And you see this theme that's just sort of constantly unfolding throughout redemptive history. And you know what's amazing? Is at the very end, in Revelation 21, the very end, Revelation 21, 1 through 5, we revisit the theme of Emmanuel, God with people, literally from the beginning, and now we'll be at the end. And it says this, then I saw, at the end, a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, adorned before her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. Beginning and end, right? He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more, neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. And he who was seated on the throne said, behold, I am making all things new. And he said, write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. Amen? We have peace. But peace is far from us until the end. We see evidences of the lack of shalom in our world. Wars, homelessness, poverty, suffering, sickness, human trafficking, divorce, broken families, orphanages, custody battles, greed, death, abuse, corruption, famine, hatred, natural disasters, and I could go on and on and on. There's so much brokenness in this world that is crying out and saying, God, bring peace. Resolve the tension. But it's not just out there. I think that we know those things exist, but they're sometimes not very personal to us. But the conflict is not just out there. It's also in here. We experience things like loneliness, depression, anxiety, addiction, lust, jealousy, envy, bitterness, pride, poor speech, impatience, anger, grudges, fear, hatred, or just the fact that each of us one day, as we are wasting away, will one day die. Does that sound peaceful? No. There's so much conflict, not just around us, but in us. But in light of that, that's why I read this passage, because the solution has been given. And God is a promise keeper. And the fact of the matter is that he will wipe away every tear. And pain will be no more. And death will be no more. And crying will be no more. And mourning will be no more. And loss will be no more. And hurt and suffering and sickness, it will all be gone. Death will be finished. He's making all things new. And I'm going to say one more time, God is a promise keeper. He's faithful. And even when we don't feel peace, our feelings are lying, because Satan preys on our feelings, manipulates them, turns them against the truth, and says, no. How you feel is the truth, and what God says, it may not come to be. But his way is better. In fact, there's a song, a guy named Forrest Frank. Forrest Frank is a very popular musician. Right now, he's a believer, and seems to be, I can't peer into his heart, but really seems to be one of the real ones, one of the good ones. He has a song that was extremely popular, is extremely popular, called Your Way's Better. It's sort of written as a prayer to God, But I think his words resonate with us. They resonate with the listener, which I think is why it's so popular. And I think it resonates with our message today. And so I want to read a little bit of the lyrics of his song. It says this. It's the beginning of the song. He says, "When I'm broken down inside and there's nowhere else to hide, I need a place where I feel known. Can someone help me? Then I hear your reply bringing teardrops to my eyes, saying, I'm not alone." And then the chorus says, "Oh Lord, I need you now more than ever. Would you put my heart back together? I searched the world till my head hurt just to find out your way is better." Guys, peace is not, please listen, peace is not the result of freeing your life of conflict. Peace is the result of knowing Christ, who is our peace, no matter what the conflict. My point is that when you talk to the lady, the Christ follower who's been walking with him for 50 years, who just lost her husband, and you say, "How you doing?" And she says, "I'm at peace." On the surface, that doesn't make any sense, okay? The reason it makes sense is not because the circumstances are peaceful. It's because she knows the God who is over the circumstances. And I'm telling you, the same can be true in your life. You don't have to have peaceful circumstances to be at peace, because God is our peace, because Christ is our peace, and he has advented, and praise be unto God, he is adventing again. If you are chasing fullness, there is only one place that you will find it. And to echo the words of our friend Forrest Frank, his way is better. You know, my mom still has that Joseph figurine. I learned that last week. Just an ongoing reminder of how terrible her children are. She still has this figurine. And I was like, "Are you serious?" She said, "Yep." And she said, "And it's still broken." I said, "You didn't glue it?" She said, "I glued it, but it's still broken." You see, it's glued, it's covering the fracture, but it has to be made new for it to really be restored. Some of you, listen, please listen, especially in a season where I believe that God may be trying to get some people's attention here, okay? Some of you have been covering your breaks, hoping that your heart feels restored, and it's been a vain effort. But deep down, you know that you're broken. And you may have fooled other people. You're trying to fool yourself, and yet you can't fool God. And you also know the truth. But I'm here to tell you some really good news, that there is one who can fix your brokenness, who can bring lasting peace that transcends your circumstances. And his name is Jesus, and he is our Emmanuel. The fact of the matter is that you can't get to God on your own. But God made his way to you, and he died for you. He took your place in death. He vacated his own grave and said, "I want to offer that to you." But the reality is, at the end of your life, someone will pay for your sin. It will either be you, or it will be Jesus. And I want you to be able to say confidently that it's the latter, and then to be able to live your life in that peace. So I'll close by saying one word, one phrase of a song that you'll probably hear a few times this Christmas season. As we talk through Christmas, our goal in pursuing peace is simply this: O come, let us adore him, Christ the Lord.